All right, now verse 22, you're probably going to be relatively familiar. You may have heard this verse before. It's used all the time in many things. The big interesting thing is, notice the context. It does not start off by saying, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, life for life, does it? It actually gives you a specific scenario in which this was supposed to play out. So, if men are fighting, if men who are fighting hit a pregnant woman, she shouldn't have gotten in the middle of it. And oh, wait, I'm sorry. No, I'm just kidding. I don't understand how a fight breaks out in a pregnant woman's there, but, you know. Can I tell you my favorite verse? Would this be inappropriate? One of my favorite verses is, if two men are fighting and the wife of one comes to rescue her husband from his assailant and grabs him by the private parts, you shall cut off her hand. Show her no mercy. Isn't that a great... Do you ever get letters from a pastor and they have a quote verse at the bottom? Do you ever look those up? Because I'd love to send that out sometimes, and then people wonder why in the world I send that out. Anyway, so there's this pregnant lady and she gives birth prematurely, and you also have a footnote there. And what? Yeah, go ahead, yell it out. Or has a miscarriage. It's hard to tell. In this passage, there's some very big ambiguity when it comes to even the pronouns and then exactly what happens. So she either miscarries or she gives birth prematurely. I tend to lean that the proper translation would be giving birth prematurely, because it continues on. But there is no serious injury. The offender must be fined whatever the woman's husband demands and the court allows. But if there is serious injury, and the question you got to ask is, serious injury to whom? The language is ambiguous enough that I believe you could support either one. If the woman is injured in this way, or the child comes out disfigured, either one, this passage applies. If there is serious injury, you are to take life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise. This eventually came to be known as the capital punishment that would happen, and even nowadays, Christians have a big struggle with, should they or should they not support capital punishment. And interestingly enough, the Bible, once again, doesn't take a cold, hard stance on it. There is room for both views. I have heard Christians say, if you are a true Christian, you have to believe in capital punishment. If someone takes your life, you are to take their life away from them. And I've also heard of many Christians as well saying, no, if someone takes a life, there is to be mercy and grace. That's the heart of Jesus. Interestingly enough, again, both scenarios apply. So you could be a Christian and believe for capital punishment or against capital punishment. The door is open for both of those interpretations. So try not to get too dogmatic and try not to slam a Christian because they believe on one side or the other. It's a hard concept. Now, why would God lay this out? This is a very, but you got to understand the reason why. Because we are people who naturally love to retaliate. Correct? We love to retaliate. 4 weeks ago, approximately, I think about a month ago, I get a phone call at work, and it's Heather. And she says, Mark, something bad happened at school to Mark Thomas. And I said, what happened? She said, well, he was going up to play on a ladder, and he didn't realize that he had cut in front of some other kids. You know Mark Thomas, he's kind of just, you know, he does his own thing. And he cut in front of a kid, and the kid was so upset that he grabbed him, threw him down to the ground, and started kicking him. I don't see red that often. I was very upset. I was physically trembling. I was so upset that someone would go and attack Mark Thomas because he has absolutely no idea what's going on. I was so, so angry. Then added to that, the mother of this child came to his defense and said, well, he didn't know that that was a special needs child. And you are having the same reaction that I'm having. Should it really matter? It's not appropriate. And it was really sad because Mark Thomas's teacher, who is becoming a very close friend of our family, she still can't tell us that story without tears coming, because she was one of the people that rushed in and rescued Mark Thomas. The principal got involved, and I I wanted so badly to find that kid and retaliate. Would I have followed eye for eye, bruise for bruise? Or would I have gone harder and stronger? In the movie Untouchables, that's exactly what Sean Connery says. Someone pulls a knife, you pull a gun. Someone puts one of your guys in the hospital, you put him in the morgue. That's the Chicago way. That's not the Chicago way. That's the human way. We are people that love to retaliate, and we don't do hand for hand, eye for eye, bruise for bruise. No, we go one step forward. We want extra punishment. And that's what makes this verse so interesting. It's actually trying to curb man's anger and man's sense of retaliation. Just to let you know, so that you don't think too poorly of this kid that beat up Mark Thomas, after it was explained to him who Mark Thomas was and what he was all about, the kid has since become one of Mark Thomas's major advocates. He's the one that watches him on the playground. He wants to come into the classroom and sit with him and read with him and talk with him. He understands that what he did was wrong. And I wonder, I asked myself, and I was talking to Heather about this, I asked myself, what would have happened if I retaliated? Would this child have ever come around to this? Jesus says it really cleanly. I know you don't, what did I do with it? Matthew chapter 5. Bible, so keep it here in Exodus 20. Matthew chapter 5, this gets requoted in the very famous Sermon on the Mount. And I know you've heard this. It's very, very popular. Matthew 5, what's the verse? 38? Yeah, that's right. There we go. An eye for an eye. You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. These are probably some of the hardest words that Jesus ever spoke, because it goes absolutely contrary to our nature, doesn't it? If someone comes up and slaps you in the face, what do you do? Slap back. Maybe you don't use it with an open hand. Maybe you use a closed fist. And Jesus is saying, and that, again, that's why this really does point to the ministry. It's trying to tell you that there's got to be this curbing. And then beyond that, Jesus Christ himself will not do the same for us. There is no retaliation, if I might say. There's no condemnation for those in Christ Jesus. The stuff that you have done, God will not seek revenge and restitution against you. He will not retaliate because he's already done it. Every whip, every rod, every stripe, every blood mark that was on Jesus Christ was the full retaliation of God for your and I's sin. And that's a hard thing, because you can imagine Christ up on the cross, and he even says that I could call down legions of angels to my defense. And he really didn't need legions. He could probably just use one. You know, one wiped out an entire Assyrian army one night. Imagine what a whole legion could do. They could have brought the full wrath and fury of God. But that's not where it was to land. It wasn't to land on the people that were doing it. It wasn't to land on the people that it should have landed on. It landed on the pure and holy Son of God. That's an amazing concept. So please, when you read this, I was really shocked as I started to look at some of the things. Maybe you have that same problem when it comes to punishment. Someone does something and you want to punish them and you want to get just a little bit further. Maybe you did that when you were kids growing up with your brother or sister. My sisters would slug me in the arm. I'd slug them in the stomach. Don't attack me. And that's the way we are. And here, God is laying out a brand new thing for him, saying, curb that. Don't go too far. Now, unfortunately, that's when the Pharisees grabbed that verse and exacted the punishment and demanded that punishment be made. It was never a requirement that it had to go out. It was a requirement to keep people from acting too harsh. All right, let's keep going. If a man hits a main, if a man hits a manservant or a maidservant in the eye and destroys it, he must let the servant go free to compensate for the eye. And if he knocks out the tooth of a manservant or maidservant, he must let the servant go free to compensate for the tooth. Now, imagine if this law was actually true in America. There'd be a lot of free people, wouldn't it? This was once again a protection for the people that had become voluntary slaves. Yes. They have the opportunity to go and find other employment. No, it does not. No, it does not. And you got to also understand, again, it's not, it's really hard to get a clean analogy. Work is a close idea that will help us to understand it, that it wasn't the brutal slavery that we have come to understand when we address American history. These rules seem to indicate it protects the slave. Yeah, exactly. What laws were enacted here in America that protected slaves? Zero. It was a brutal society. This was a much different thing. And remember also, Kim, that it's voluntary. I could not come up to you, and again, we addressed this last week, but it's a good review. I could not come up to you and kidnap you and force you to become my slave. You, if you were desperate for money and you wanted some salary, you could come to me and say, I will be your slave. And you were only indebted to me for 6 years. On the seventh year, you went free. It was not a permanent for-life thing, and I could not kidnap. If I kidnapped you and was found with you, what was my punishment? Good, death. Jesus, death. One of those answers. I never get this close, do I? I'm coming to the background. Yeah. Am I freaking you out coming back here? Yes, Chris. I'm sorry, what?
Are there any writings on the comparison, just out of curiosity?
Writings on the comparison? No, none that I am aware of. See, and again, it's so hard because the slavery that we know is a kidnapping of people from a foreign country, and it was pure oppression to keep them in line. Now, please understand, that wasn't the entire way, correct? There were slave owners that were very humane and very loving and caring towards their people. And remember, this is a much different culture, much different time and place. Yes, Cynthia. No, if I was trying to punish you and I hit you and you lost an eye or a tooth, that was a preventing way to keep the slave owners from becoming brutal people. Yes, Richard. It's a very human thing, isn't it? I think that's what these laws... And also remember this, that when God set these up, it was not an initiation of this, correct? God was not initiating slavery. Yeah, and why do we know that? Do we have any biblical evidence? No, I don't have it on the screen, but I talked about this last week, how important it is to remember that they were allowed to divorce people. And then Jesus comes along and says, you really shouldn't do that. God allowed this to happen because you were hard of heart. And I can only allow you to work within the structure and try and get you to change little by little by little until I can finally bring you to where I'm at. Do I believe that Christianity itself has finally reached its pinnacle height of morality? Oh, I don't think so. I think there's plenty more that even the Christian church can continue to grow in. But right now, much like their society, hard of heart. We've got our ideals and our society and our culture, and that's the way it is. Yeah, remember, this culture is really trying to set up its own sense of identity. They were slaves. Remember, when Jacob came into this land, with his 12 sons, and that became the 12 tribes of Israel. This was brand new. They were so small, and then they grew to this 2 million group of people, but they were all slaves, brutally treated by the Egyptians. And God's trying to set it up, saying, you're not going to be like that. Now, you have slaves right now, and that's a hard thing to understand, so I'm going to try and set it up so that there's protection. You know, the same thing happens also in other cultures right now. There are cultures that the gospel is being preached at that there are husbands that have multiple wives. So the question comes up, what do you tell them to do? Divorce 9 of their wives and just keep one of them? It gets a little sticky, don't it? It gets a little touchy. It gets a little hard. Do you sin 9 more times? Or do you allow a person to have then multiple wives? It's not as clean as I think a lot of people tend to believe. I believe that if you understand once again the reason behind it, when you look at eye for eye, tooth for tooth, and you look at this slavery issue, this is a curbing, a preventative way to keep people from going over the edge, from keeping people from going too brutal. And I think that that should still be applied today. I think that should be applied with discipline in the schools, in the houses, in just regular business transactions. Watch the retaliation. All right, verse 28. Good questions. This is tough stuff to deal with. Oh, yes, Megan. You're wrong. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, right. And also, if you remember, the Egyptians essentially kidnapped, I mean, they were there in the land, but eventually they were kidnapped and forced to work in the Egyptian culture, and God clearly denounces that too. The American form of slavery is clearly denounced in the Bible, and so that's why he's trying to work within the frame. And isn't that a comforting thing? I mean, just think about this for a moment. If God did not meet you where you are at, who could he meet? Nobody. I mean, we all have different sins that we have to deal with. We all have different backgrounds that we have to deal with. And God is going to come to you where you're at, and he's going to try and help you where you're at and help you grow as a Christian. And as you do that, all of a sudden you might hear more teaching. You go, oh, maybe I should conform even more in this way. And as time goes on, you become more and more in the image and likeness of Christ. Am I there yet? I sure hope I haven't claimed that I've arrived. I have much more growing still to do. But God has met me where I'm at. He teaches and allows me to grow. And sometimes he has to break then the hard heart as I continue to grow and become more in his likeness. So yes, that's the culture that they were dealing with. So God met them at the culture that they were at to try and help them so that they could grow in the faith and love towards him. All right, let's move on. Good job, good job. Verse 28. If a bull gores or an owl gores a man or a woman to death. Okay, since you booed, I will have to give credit to this joke to John Corson from Searchlight Radio. That was his. And he pretty much got the same reaction. I guess I should just listen to the reaction of his group, and it's probably going to be the same that you guys. I just like it, gore, you know. Oh, man, much to say. Okay, this might not be too exciting to you because I don't know if you own bulls, but could does anybody? Does anyone own an Al Gore, a bull or gore? But this could be applied to dog owners, I think. Yes. Hmm. Yes, and this is going to speak directly to this. Yeah. Let's see what this says. If a bull gores a man or a woman to death, the bull must be stoned to death. And its meat must not be eaten. Bad bull. Bad bull. Is there a Red Bull joke in there somewhere too? No, we're moving on. Moving on. So if the bull attacks and kills someone, you're destroyed. Now remember, destroying animals was not a fun thing because that's your livelihood, people. It's not quite like today. Because it's not like we raised dogs for barbecuing purposes. But back in those days, they did. If you had a bull, you would use it for its meat. And so if you had to kill a bull and it not be allowed to be eaten, that was a serious punishment. It really was. But the owner of the bull will not be held responsible if, however, the bull has had the habit of goring and the owner has been warned but has not kept it penned up. This is exactly what's happened with other dogs that are very vicious and have been known to attack. and it kills a man or woman, the bull must be stoned, and the owner also must be put to death. Yeah, they got off a little bit easier than that. Now, I've, again, made the statement, don't I think that everything points to Jesus Christ? Do you think this will point to him? Let's find out! However, if payment is demanded of him, he may redeem his life by paying whatever is demanded. So if I had a bull that was known to attack and it killed somebody and we killed the bull, they could ask for my death in return, or they could say, just give us some money and you may redeem your life. My friends, we have not been redeemed with gold or silver, but with the holy, precious, innocent suffering and death of Jesus Christ. Redeeming of life is all through this. It's going to happen a little bit later here too. Redeeming of life. This son also applies to the bull gores, a son or a daughter. Aren't you excited about that, Kim? The women are protected too. God bless the women. If the bull gores a man, now check this out. Please be careful. Don't try and get caught in the culture here, but ask yourself, does this point to Jesus Christ? If the bull gores a male or female slave, the owner must pay 30 shekels of silver to the master of the slave, and the bull must be stoned. How many shekels? Okay, what's running through your mind? Judas. This also lets you know the price of a slave is 30 shekels of silver. What did I say last week? Jesus Christ is the ultimate slave and servant to us. And he was, in fact, betrayed for 30 pieces of silver. Isn't it interesting how it all ties together, how it all fits together? Pretty amazing. All right, verse 33 really gets into kind of social responsibility. If a man uncovers a pit or digs one and fails to cover it, and an ox or a donkey falls into it, the owner of the pit must pay for the loss. He must pay its owner, and the dead animal will be his. You know, this is trying to just help protect that, you know, try and be responsible in your life. I think this is probably, of all the sins that America commits, I think this is probably the worst, wouldn't you agree? When it comes to responsibility, what are you supposed to do? If you are being accused of a crime, what's your answer? Didn't do it. Point to someone else. Wasn't me. I can lay blame somewhere else instead of saying, nope, that was my fault. Very rare when you see someone actually do that. It's usually only people allocute only after they've been pressed and it looks like they're about to lose. Then they'll finally say, okay, yeah, I did it. And then they'll get a lesser sentence. Here, God is saying, take responsibility for your actions. If you've messed up, you've messed up. Parents, if you've messed up, and you did something wrong to your children, own up to it. Just say, I'm sorry, I messed up. Your kids will forgive you. They'll still love you. Kids, if you mess up, just say it. I messed up, man. I did something stupid. And your parents will love you and forgive you. Take responsibility. I could preach on that for years. Take responsibility for your actions. Verse 35, if a man's bull injures the bull of another and it dies, they are to sell the live one and divide both the money and the dead animal equally. However, if it was known that the bull had the habit of goring, yet the owner does not keep it penned up, the owner must pay animal for animal and the dead animal will be his. So, you know, my bull kills your bull and my bull is not that bad, then we're supposed to sell the good bull and divide the money equally. Yet if my bull is a bad bull, and it kills it, then I have to give you my live bull and I get your dead bull. I don't know if killing the bull is like a deterrent. Like all the bulls are like, oh, man. See what happened to Harry there? I'll be a good bull. It was to make sure that the owners took responsibility. I mean, this is very touchy because can you get into this with, that's the whole question of, should parents be held liable for the sins of their kids? Ooh, I just scared all of you, huh? Yeah, this is hard. That way. I think it was to try and prevent it so that I don't just let my animals go and run free and not take responsibility. If something is of my property and it damages your property, I need to own up to it. I need to say I need to take responsibility.
It also says that human life is more precious than
that. Oh, there were no bulls harmed in the making of this Bible. That is, yeah. I remember we actually talked about this, and remember we showed the clip from Independence Day, and the dog was saved. We're like, we love it, the dog. Now, there's like millions of people that died, but the dog lived. And imagine if all of the people were saved, but the dog died, Independence Day would have failed. Who cares about the speech Bill Pullman says at the end? It would have flopped because the dog died. I hate to tell you this. This is a biblical concept, and I do believe in it. Human life is much more precious than animal life. Do I believe animal life is precious? Sure. We don't just go around killing things. But if it came to animal life and human life is much more precious. Yes. Piece of meat to be eaten, yeah. No, I don't think we should ever go that way, and I won't get into the whole, if my pet dies, does it go to heaven issue. If you want to know my personal opinion, I can give it to you later. It's to prevent us also not from, and I also, back in those days, you wouldn't mistreat your animals and have them be killed needlessly, because that was your livelihood. That's how you survived in the life. If you didn't have animals, you were essentially, you better be a good farmer. Yes. Little kids, plug your ears. We're talking about little cows. Yeah, yeah. After that, then you're just going to be having milk and burgers. Yeah, because you can't procreate. Yeah. And you see, the same requirement is not to a female. See how they let the female cows off? Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And that's the reason why we're going to see it coming up here really shortly. If you remember, we had studied it earlier, and they're going to bring it back up, which is God owns every firstborn male. If you want to keep your firstborn male, you better kill a goat in order to redeem it. If you don't have a goat, you can use a lamb to redeem your firstborn child. Yeah. Again, all this stuff, it's easy to get caught in the culture trap. And, imagine the laws that were on the books in the 1900s. I mean, they'd just be absolutely ridiculous nowadays. It's sometimes hard to understand the rule and the reason behind it, but then ask yourself the question, and that's the reason why Leviticus sometimes throws people. It's like, I just can't handle going through all these stinking laws. Who cares if I wear a cotton polyester blend shirt? It all has to do with Jesus Christ. When you put Jesus in the middle of it, all of the stuff starts opening up. God has great economy. He's going to give you stuff, but he also wants it always to be pointing to Jesus Christ. Everything in here points to it. His redemption, his slavery, his price as a servant, everything is pointing to Jesus Christ and the fact that we're redeemed. All right, let's keep moving. You guys are talkative today. All right. I don't know if we'll finish this stuff. That's okay. We'll keep going. Chapter 22, some more stuff. If a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it, he must pay back 5 head of cattle for the ox and 4 sheep for the sheep. That's trying to prevent stealing, right? These are pretty much also commentaries on the Ten Commandments. So if you steal, you're going to have to pay back 5 times. Chances are if you're stealing, you don't have the 5 times to pay back. It's really trying to, turn the screws there. Don't take the easy way out on that. If a thief is caught breaking in and is struck so that he dies, the defender is not guilty of bloodshed. What do we call that? Yeah. But if it happens after sunrise, he is guilty of bloodshed. Isn't it interesting that the more light you have, the more responsible you must be? Now, I just said that in a law way, but what did that also mean metaphorically? The more you have the light of Christ in you, the more you are held responsible, which is why people don't love going to church, because you're going to be held responsible for more actions. All right. A thief must certainly make restitution. Where am I? Where is it? Middle of verse 3. A thief must certainly make restitution, but if he has nothing, he must be sold to pay for his theft. Woo! If the stolen animal is found alive in his possession, whether ox or donkey or sheep, he must pay back double. So if he steals something and you kill it and sell it, then you owe 5 times, Matt. If you stole it and then you were caught with it, you had to pay back double. And then we also find out a little bit later on, if you stole it and then brought it back voluntarily, voluntarily confessing, you paid 1.5 times back. Interesting, isn't it? I mean, doesn't that sound quite right? All right, keep going. If a man grazes his livestock in a field or vineyard and lets them stray and they graze in another man's field, he must make restitution from the best of his own field or vineyard. You know, keep your donkeys in your own pen. There's got to be some. No, we're moving on. Verse 6, if a fire breaks out and spreads onto thorn bushes so that it burns shocks of grain or standing grain of the whole field, the one who started the fire must make restitution, trying to stop arsonists, right? If a man gives his neighbor silver or goods for safekeeping and they're stolen from the neighbor's house, the thief, if he is caught, must pay back double. But if the thief is not found, the owner of the house must appear before the judges. You have a text note on the word judges. Remember, we talked about this last week, too. It's actually the word Elohim, meaning gods, but it is, you know, being used as representative there. It's not actually that these people were gods themselves. You must appear before the judges to determine whether he has laid hands on the other man's property. In all cases of illegal possession of an ox, a donkey, a sheep, a garment, or any other lost property, which someone has said, this is mine, both parties bring their cases before the judges. The one whom the judge declares guilty must pay back double to his neighbor. So yeah, if you know, you say, hey, can you watch my, you know, Porsche for me? And it all of a sudden gets mysteriously stolen. It wasn't my fault. You could investigate me to find out if, you know, maybe I sold it on eBay or, you know, sold it to, you know, traveling Egyptian somewhere else. Then I'd be held responsible. But you could also go before the judges and say, hey, man, I didn't do it. And he does this also, covers a little bit more. Let's keep going. If a man gives a donkey, an ox, or sheep, or any other animal to his neighbor for safekeeping, and it dies, or is injured, or is taken away while no one is looking, the issue between them will be settled by the taking of an oath before the Lord that the neighbor did not lay hands on the other person's property. Don't you wish oaths meant more today? You know, someone puts their hand on the Bible, and they say, yes, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God. Back in those days, if you failed to do that, your penalty was? Jesus, death, yes, that's right, death. Back then, it actually meant something. I don't think it means much nowadays. It's very sad. The owner is to accept this, and no restitution is required, but if the animal is stolen from the neighbor, he must make restitution to the owner. If it was torn to pieces by a wild animal, he shall bring in the remains as evidence, and he will not be required to pay for the torn animal. If a man borrows an animal from his neighbor and is injured or dies while the owner is not present, he must make restitution. So, yes, if you borrow my hedge clippers and they break while they're in your possession, you need to buy me new hedge clippers. Who said that? Was that my neighbor that said that? just kidding. But if the owner is with the animal, the borrower will not have to pay. So if I borrow your hedge clip, if you borrow my hedge clippers and I go over and watch you destroy my own set of hedge clippers, well, then I'm an idiot for letting you destroy my own hedge clippers and you're not required to pay. See, there's great contemporary application. Aren't you excited you're here? Social responsibility. If a man seduces a virgin who has not pledged to be married and sleeps with her, he must pay the bride price. Again, I'd love to maybe write a paper on this, you know, the concept that there is no such thing as premarital sex. Because once you have sex, you're married. If you seduce a virgin, you have sex with her, you are required. Do you see it? Do you hear it? You are required to pay the bride price. You're married. Pay it. And she shall be his wife. Dads, don't you wish this law was still in action today? If her father absolutely refuses to give her to him, he must still pay the bride price. Isn't that great? So, you know, you end up with some dork and don't like him. Dad says, no, I don't, you know, give me the money and you still don't get to marry. You can imagine, this is a huge sum of money. This was the dowry that was to prevent any divorce from happening, because if a divorce took place or something like that, then that money would be given to the woman so she could survive and live in that culture. So it was a costly thing. It wasn't, you know, $20 for a prostitute. It was a huge amount of money in order to pay for this person's bride price. So, and if dad didn't like it, dad could say, no can do, you're not marrying her, but I still want your money. Man, I'm so glad I don't have daughters. We have someone about to be married here too. Lauren's about to be married. You know, we could have some contemporary applications. You're not a kid anymore. I know, you're a kid from Arizona. God bless you. Can you get married? Yeah, when you can start having a beer with the kids you used to work with, there's something wrong. There's just something totally wrong. Yes. That's why, yeah, because that's how part of this thing happened. If she was now that way, she would be damaged goods by most people's estimations. Now, there were opportunities that they sometimes did get a chance to marry them off, but then that money is now set aside for her so that if she becomes an old spinster, she can still at least survive and live. It was a protection of the female. So it was really trying to come down hard on the male, saying, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't be going around seducing virgins. What'd you learn in church today? You know that kids' church follows the same stuff we do, right? I don't know what they're teaching. No, I'm just kidding. No, they're not talking about that. They're talking about verse 18. Do not allow a sorceress to live. Yeah, now sorceress. What was that? Oh, Peter's denial of Christ. Don't worry. We won't talk to your kids about sex and tell you about it. Just kidding. Do not allow... Yeah, and the idea was a sorcerer would also be, because this was not just a concept here. This was talked about all over the place. Do I have any biblical evidence to back this up? Why, I'm so glad you asked. Finally, we get to some PowerPoint. Deuteronomy 18. When you enter the land the Lord your God is giving you, do not learn to imitate the detestable ways of the nations there. Let no one be found among you who sacrifices his son or daughter in the fire. Did you know that that's what they did? They had statues, huge statues built over lava pits that had arms in them that were red hot. And you would take your baby and place them in the red hot arms and they would burn up in the fire. It's a brutal culture. Nasty. It is absolutely horrible. Who practices divination or sorcery, interprets omens, engages in witchcraft or casts spells, or who is a medium or spiritist, or who consults the dead. And then he also says later on, Micah 5:12, I will destroy your witchcraft and you will no longer cast spells. Keep going. Jeremiah 27, do not listen to your prophets, your diviners, your interpreters of dreams, your mediums, or your sorcerers who tell you, you will not serve the king of Babylon. Keep going. They prophesy lies to you that you will only serve to remove you far from your lands. I will banish you and you will perish. Why is God against this? Malachi really helps us out. So I will come near to you for judgment. I will be quick to testify against sorcerers, adulterers, and perjurers, against those who defraud laborers of their wages. Keep going. Who oppress the widows and the fatherless and deprive aliens of justice, but do not fear me, says the Lord Almighty. Imagine if you were a sorceress, you could come up with some really cool things to say, like you're going to meet some tall, dark, and handsome stranger named Fred, and you're going to have a nice, long, and happy life. Please give me $20 for reading your palm. If it's not godly, it's not godly, plain and simple. And God is trying to set up a thing saying, there is no other God other than me. Do not follow after the ways of the culture. Do not do that. If you are going to seek any information, ask him first. Wouldn't that be a wonderful concept? Same thing, I believe, with surgery and medical stuff. Should you go to a doctor? Yes! But have you also asked God? Have you talked to him? Have you asked for help from him? Or do you just do worldly stuff? Same thing with, what should I do with my life? Should you consult a job specialist trainer? Sure! Have you asked God lately? Now that would be an interesting concept, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be interesting if we all started seeking God's input and not just the world's input? Yeah. What about the extreme makeover? Yeah. Because I'll tell you this, God will give you an extreme makeover. May not touch your physical part, but he'll touch you. It's good to consult God. So that's the reason why the sorcerer's not. And in verse 19, anyone who has sexual relations with an animal must be put to death. That's what Children's Church is talking about. They're not talking about the other stuff. They went out and bought the Madonna book and everything. No, do we have any other scriptural evidence to support this? Why, yes, we do. I'm glad you asked. What was that? You don't need any more? You're like, no-brainer, no big deal, just keep moving on. Do not have sexual relations with an animal and defy can you answer the question, why? What's the reason behind the law? It's gross. No.
Because other people were.
No. The last line. It is a perversion. This might go into other areas. Keep going. Leviticus 20, if a woman approaches an animal. Yeah, okay, keep going, go. Yeah, go, keep going. Deuteronomy curses the man. Then all the people shall say,
amen.
Yes, good, okay, I'm glad we don't have to preach on that. I'm so glad I didn't have to do any research on that. Like, yeah, never mind, we're moving on. Verse 20, whoever sacrifices to any god other than the Lord must be destroyed. Oh, wow. Verse 21, very important. Reminder once again, do not mistreat an alien. This is not, you know, Area 51 with, you know, five eyeballs. Alien is a foreigner. Or oppress him, for you were aliens in Egypt. Do not take advantage of a widow or an orphan. If you do and they cry out to me, I will certainly hear their cry. Have you noticed that God seems to always be interested in the people that don't quite have it so good? Isn't it interesting that when they speak, God kind of bends just a little bit lower to listen a little bit closer? Isn't that interesting? Some people think, you know, I have no one for me. Well, God definitely is. Which also just, I hope there's a special place for the people that do take advantage of you know, I think of, you know, my grandmother, and maybe some people take advantage. Maybe they do it under the guise of religion. Send me $100 so I can, you know, live and not die. You know, send me $300 and send me this and send me that. And God told me that you need to send me money. And then the people that scam off the, you know, I think of Lake Arrowhead area. The fires. All of a sudden, contractors swooped in. Give me $100, I'll be here tomorrow and we'll start the process. They gave them $100 and off they left. Don't do it. Don't do it. Verse 23, if you lend money to one of my people among you who is needy, do not be like a money lender. Charge him no interest. Look at the text note. Man, I struggled with that one. I could not get a clean interpretation. I seriously could not. It could literally go both ways. The word that's used there is often used in the context of placing upon. So it says, do not place upon a person interest. But that same word could also be translated as high. Do not place high interest on him. It's tough. It's a tough one. So I can't tell you what to do with that. So, you know, charge interest, don't charge interest. But look what's supposed to happen. If you take your neighbor's cloak as a pledge, like you take some collateral, return it to him by sunset, because his cloak is the only covering he has for his body. What else will he sleep with? When he cries out to me, I will hear, for I'm compassionate. If you take someone's collateral, and that's their only means, and you're taking advantage because you know that that's what they have to give you, God's going to hear their cry. And underline that. If you ever wanted to know the heart of God, once again, this is the thing that absolutely annoyed Jonah to no end. Worst preacher of mankind. Goes into Nineveh. Y'all going to die. 3 days. You're going to die. This whole place going to be burned up. See you later. Off he goes. Why was he ticked off doing it? Because he knew. He knew God is compassionate. You could be the greatest person with the greatest faith, the greatest knowledge of mystery and revelation. And if you don't have compassion, what are you? You're a noisy gong, a clanging cymbal. You are useless. Always watch out for those people that if they don't have love in their hearts, they're also talked about as ferocious wolves in sheep clothing. All right. Do not blaspheme God. Do you kind of get the idea that he doesn't want his name blasphemed or to be? Or curse the ruler of your people. So I don't care how bad of a job I do. Interestingly enough, this also happened in Book of Acts. This exact place thing was quoted. Paul insulted the high priest, and they're like, don't insult the high priest. Paul replied, brothers, I did not realize that he was the high priest, for it is written, do not speak evil about the ruler of your people. This is probably seen the most cleanly in David. David's father-in-law was this mean, nasty dude who was always trying to pin him to the wall with a spear. And when David had the opportunity to kill him, he never did. Why? He says, I will never lift up my hand against the Lord's anointed. You know, it's actually interesting because this is kind of still followed today. When I did ministry at St. Louis at the seminary, one of the places I had to go to was the downtown, really nasty, gang-infested area. You know what they told me to do? Wear the collar. It'll give them something better to shoot at. No, they didn't. They didn't tell. They said, wear the collar. And I said, why wear the collar? And they said, they still have respect for God's anointed. I said, you're joking me. I said, no, they still have respect. I went to the jails. They said, wear your collar. I said, why? They have more respect. And sure enough, when I walked down, people all, hey, Father, how you doing? Hey, Father. They thought I was Catholic. Hey, Father. Hey. Isn't it interesting? And I think and that's a healthy thing. I think it's healthy to have respect for God's anointed. So give me respect. I'm just kidding. I should just preach on that. I should have skipped all the other stuff and preached on that for an hour. All right, and now, verse 29. Here we go. Is this a commentary on the commandments? Well, yeah. What commandment is number 29 talking about? Stealing. Do not hold back offerings from your granaries or vats. Do you have a text note on yours on that, out of curiosity? What does it say? This meaning is uncertain. Well, do you want me to certainize it for you? It's strange language. It literally says, do not hold back offerings from your fullness and drippings. If God has given you a lot in your life, he expects a lot in return. He talks about it in the parable of talents. He talks about that all over the place. It's huge. So if you're given a lot of bounty, God says, don't hold it back. Don't hold back from your fullness and drippings. Here you go. You must give me the firstborn of your sons. Do not do the same with your cattle and your sheep. Let them stay with their mothers for 7 days, but give them to me on the eighth day. And the way it actually happened was you were to give them to the priest, and he was supposed to be raised as a Levite. He was supposed to be raised as a priest. If you didn't want him to become a pastor, you could redeem him by killing an animal. Firstborns can be redeemed. Sons, correct. Yeah, the daughters would not go into that service, correct. Verse 31, you are to be my holy people, so do not eat the meat of any animal torn by wild beasts. Throw it to the dogs. Last night we had a little barbecue, and we dropped a little sausage on the ground. Don't feed it to your people. That's just disgusting, man. Give it to the dogs. We're going to stop there. 23, as you see, where there's going to be a couple more justice and mercy laws, and then it's going to get into some very interesting thing about the annual feast, and then it kind of moves away from that, and then we're going to be talking a lot about the Holy Temple. Let's pray. Father in heaven, help us to continue. I know how hard it is. I know it shocks my ears when I try and understand the culture that is being talked about here, and it kind of blows my mind, and I sometimes get caught in those details. Lord, help me not to try and talk about a ridiculous law or a stupid law, because we've all done that. And throughout history, we have laws. Help us to understand why the laws were enacted. Help us to see that you are a God of compassion, that you don't want people mistreated. You don't want people to retaliate. You reserve that for yourself. You don't want us to follow the ways of the world. You want us to be a holy people, a set apart people. You want us to do things just a little bit differently so people stand up and take notice. And Lord, I thank you for the fact that your son is all over this. That we can look and put Jesus in the middle of this, and we understand that he is the greatest servant of all. We understand that he is the greatest person of peace that did not seek retaliation and revenge, but he turned the other cheek. He was not someone who mistreated us as we are your servants. You never mistreated us. You loved us. You cared for us. And Lord, you also have shown that life can be redeemed through the sacrifice of something else. And I thank you, Lord, that our life can be redeemed. It has great potential because there was something sacrificed on a cross 2,000 years ago. And that sacrifice redeems us, buys us back, gives us a brand new, exciting lease on life. Give us that joy and celebration as we go out. And help, Lord, especially, most importantly, let us be a people of compassion. That we are not out there bashing this person or that, but that we are not caught without love in our heart. But that we would boldly speak your truth, but speak it in kind ways and gentle ways. Speak it in ways that others will respond. And Lord, I do. I continue to pray for that young boy that attacked my son, Lord. And I thank you that there was no retaliation. There was no seeking of revenge. And that this kid has turned around and has come a long ways. And I pray, Lord, that he become a strong advocate for kids with special needs. And I thank you, Lord, that my son didn't retaliate. And I pray that I never would. I pray, Lord, that you would continue to fill our hearts with your love, in your grace, your peace, and your mercy. And it's in Jesus' name we pray this. Amen.